it.
Mm.
Yeah.
One of the things Swedenborg says is that an evil, by which he means a non-spiritual state, basically, or an illusion, has to come to the surface, you know, in terms of plagues, dust, lice,
boils,
has to come to the surface in order to be able to be dealt with.
Mm.
Okay? It must manifest. Mm. And that's what I think the plagues.
Yeah, it has to. It's great. I mean, they have to manifest. They have to come into consciousness in order for us to actually engage our will to do something about it. And that's tied in. That's the meaning of freedom.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be seen in order for a free resistance to occur.
Mm-hmm.
And that's great, isn't it?
And that's the role of the hellish influence, isn't it? To stir up those hellish loves so that we can recognise them. And then do something about them.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah, the Lord uses them.
Yeah.
Uses their own predispositions to reveal themselves. Yeah, so it's
their own little workhorse if we let them.
Yeah.
The other I just thought that just got triggered there too is the idea of you know, the story of Moses as a baby. And Moses gets taken into the household of Pharaoh, you know, and of course the Lord's born into the world as an infant, harmless, not non-threatening.
Mm.
So this is the idea that truth initially presents itself as something non-threatening, because then it'll be taken in, and often the innocence is the innocence of our own ignorance. Thinking, oh yeah, that's really, you know, that's something I can grab hold of, and then we might even use it to judge others, or however we use it, but it's gone, and then it can begin to do its work and grow and develop and pull down that false kingdom that sets itself up before the Lord.
Just a question, David. You've said that Moses represents divine truth. Now we know in the story of Moses, while he was still in Pharaoh's palace, probably been groomed for taking over as Pharaoh when his turn came. He killed a man. He killed an Egyptian that was assaulting an Israelite. Now, what's I mean, that is murder that he committed. What's the explanation for all of that?
The presumptuousness with which we use truth early on in our spiritual lives. And I think a connection is that comes to mind from the New Testament is the story of the wheat and the tares. Where if you rip out the tares or the weeds too early, you will destroy the good.
Mm-hmm.
But we all end up doing that. We can be really hard on ourselves in terms of how we think we should be as a charitable person.
Mm-hmm.
And we can prematurely look to rip out through violence, take the kingdom of heaven by force, if you like. And that can lead to damaging the good that's there as well. So that's how I sort of look at that particular story.
But to start off with, you think you can deal with the wrong things yourself, don't you? That's the big mistake
that's
we all make.
That's right.
Yeah.
Which is why he had to flee, because he'd killed an Egyptian. He had to flee. For his own life.
Well, when we use, you know, because we can justify, you know, he felt fully justified, like if you take the story in the literal sense, he felt fully justified and right in what he was doing, what he did in that situation. Just as we do, but the realization often comes that you know, if things are done from a wrong motive, then no justification justifies it, if you like. And that's the fleeing back as the truth.
King David organised the death of Uriah, so that the husband of Bathsheba, and that was a killing. That was a form of murder, really, wasn't it? And he was penalised heavily for that. Mm-hmm. But Moses wasn't. I know the representations are different.
Yeah. So I mean, it just speaks to the point that what's recorded in the story, in terms of the representation, the correspondence, is to convey a specific aspect of truth, and so every case has to be looked at in its own context.
Right.
Yeah.
I think Moses was punished in a way, and then he had to flee for his life. He had to flee for his life.
Yeah. Yes.
Which in itself was a punishment, and he spent, was in exile for 40 years. What also comes to my mind is we have to be careful, as Swedenborg points out, that we don't confuse the characters in the story and their spiritual journey. Where they end up in heaven or hell, for example, with the truths that are represented in the Word. We sort of have to divorce those two aspects of it. So there's what Moses represents, and there's who the historical, physical Moses was, and what became of him, which is quite different. I think that's important to bear in mind too.
And also from Moses' story, he did this very bad deed, but the rest of his life he went on and did wonderful things for with the Lord guiding him, so that in the afterlife I think he has a place of in heaven, of course, a very good place in heaven. So you do get rewarded, even if you do some bad things right at the start, and you the rest of your life is on the right path, you will get your reward.
Mm. And the other aspect to look at, from a more internal aspect, is the Moses hadn't yet had an encounter with the Lord, the burning bush, which came later. Yeah. So Moses is like truth without good.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It hadn't actually been instructed through the influx of good at that point. And that's how we often can use truth. We can use it in a very unwieldy kind of in-your-face kind of way, until it's softened by good and instruction as to what needs to be done can actually be conjoined with it.
In a way, it's that murder that brings that about.
Mm. Yeah.
And it's like us, we have to reach depths of, sort of start to see what our own nature is capable of before, and that sort of becomes our turning point.
Moses actually murdered a murderer.
Yeah,
hey?
That's exactly right.
Moses murdered a murderer. And I think that's part of it, that it isn't simply a murder, but it's the ending of something that ends another life. Yeah. And I don't want to go into the moral aspect of that, because I think you talk yourself stupid. But in that sort of first step of, seeking justice, or whatever the word is, for something which has killed off something else, is all part of it. But he murdered a murderer. He didn't just murder.
Finishing a war to stop it. Entering a war to stop the war.
Yeah, sort of. Sort of, yeah. It's a sort of, one of the things the Serene Book says is that angels, when they're dealing with, you know, wrong states, they have to be, you know, firm, clear, and one step ahead of the most hardened criminal in your own mind, in order to be able to, you know, keep the preservation of the cherubim thing in place and going. You know,
yeah.
They're not just namby-pamby love yous. They're actually
tough
love. I'll read it as yeah, that's good. I like that. I read it as also in the historical sense that there was a time when good started to disappear, and a new truth comes, and that truth is very harsh because good is being lost,
right?
And so that has to be put a stop to, and therefore the response to that is, well, truth is driven out as well, but you know it comes back in another form.
Yeah,
that's how I kind of, that's one context in which I can read.
Yeah, you can look at the fleeing aspect as well in terms of what is of the Lord being separated out from what is of self, Egypt.
Because Egypt is scientifics, you know, and the scientifics of the past have, and of our present lives, can impinge on the good and holding the good up and seeing that it's really the essential part of life. Mm-hmm. We get too focused on the truth, and that has to be put a stop to at a certain point if we want to grow.
Sure. Yeah, that's great.
In the Loga practice readings, there was a really clear statement which sort of helped me. It said, started off by saying, there was no Noah. He's representative of this. There was no actual Noah. Was there an actual Moses?
Yes.
Now it's clear.
David, about Moses. David, about Moses, and about is he true or not? This is a question that sort of like I really wanted to ask as well. So thanks for opening that up. But you know, like if the story of Moses was just a story to teach the children of Israel something, right, that the Lord had intended, why couldn't it have been just a story sort of passed on through the elders to, you know, from the Lord to teach the children of Israel whatever it was needed to teach? And that the story itself, you know, like how we were talking about, you know, the story of Jesus, how it went back through history, you know, through all the different civilizations, the same story, you know, and that at the end, you know, it was a story to teach something. But with Jesus's, you know, coming into the world, you know, that's truth. But yeah, the question is, you know, could have Moses' story just been an internal teaching? Yeah, exactly, an internal teaching that had the spiritual flow within it. So when you read it, you know, it's as if, yeah, Moses really did exist, but it's a story with a spiritual sense in it, which is just being flowed through. So yeah.
Yeah, but... yeah, I mean, seeing the Jews today who still very much every Friday, every Passover, they're still celebrating that escape from Egypt, and they've just done that forever since it happened. So it's very much a real story.
See, but that's it. Is it possible that sometime in history past, that story was given to the children with a different meaning altogether, and through time, they went from it from just a story about what is something that's being taught to a fact.
Yes.
To a fact,
yeah.
That
might happen many times.
Wants.
Yeah.
Well, you know, my sense that I get there is that, of course, with Noah, the whole world was destroyed. You know, that whole story there. The flood and obviously the 7 days of creation and the whole physics that come with that make it more or less representative. But in essence of the rest of the historical world, I mean, the natural world, I mean, the Lord has his pickings from all this life, what's happened in the world to get that down on paper. Because the natural world is actually representative of what's happening spiritually.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not the other way.
Yeah.
It's not that, you know, we need to have the natural story to then learn, to then actually, you know, have the spiritual happen, it is actually capturing what is happening spiritually. And so it's not just a story, it is life. It is what's actually happening. And whether that was Moses or whether that could have been, you know, you today or somebody else, it doesn't really matter. Mm-hmm. Because it's recording, you know, what is happening in a natural world. And whether that was, you know, 10,000 years ago or 2,000 years ago or at least happening today, the story is still the same.
But when you look at Moses in the Bible, Moses is representative of mankind. So everything that the Lord is putting into Moses, you know, is for us all. So, I just lost my train of thought then.
Well, look, if you say Moses is fair income, then we're stuck. Are we not stuck with this horrible thing of a bunch of Egyptians happened to be born at the wrong time, right when the plagues happened, right, and stiff cheddar. If you live in Sydney 2000, glad you came, Albert. But it's a horrible thing to have, to inflict on anyone that happened to be living at that time. So is that part true? I mean,
but it's not inflicted on anyone.
Well, but doesn't Moses say, you will be visited by plagues because you're not doing what I want you to do?
So what it brings up is, did Moses really exist? Well, I've got no one to ask in order to determine that fact. Someone existed. How the stories are brought together in the Word is to illustrate spiritual truth. That's the primary thing. They don't have to be factually accurate to do that. So the use is presenting spiritual truth and pulling the facts together in a way that it can do that.
So does that mean that these plagues happened anyway and then they were used later as illustrations? Or?
Could do. I mean, the writings say it's historical.
I think if you shut off spiritual meanings for the moment and just go on, you know, reality, historical reality, did Moses exist level, then I think one of the helpful themes that comes for me is what I call the cultural factor. And that is that, you know, if you look at what's going on in the story, there's a lot of drawing in to the threads and flows of the story from contemporary, back then, cultural themes, okay, that would have been around in those ancient times. Plus the fact that, you know, the plagues, for example, would have been, you know, a very common type real-life plagues back in those times. So they weren't dreamed up as, you know, alien presentations. They were actually likely to happen around us and so on. Now, that's all on that level, but, you know, it is a base level for us to actually consider. But, you know, the way in which it's come about to be text, then I think actually brings in other factors which take it out of that historical, cultural, geographical type basis. But if you take that away, then I feel, as I feel about the life of Jesus, if you take that carpet away, then you actually are just hanging from the ceiling. You know, there's no substance to it. So I think there's tremendous substance because people were existing at the time to record it, to experience it, to process it, to create it.
One thing about the plagues, when my brother started high school, his religious education teacher spent the whole time explaining to them that those plagues very much do happen. The river turning to blood is the silt that washes down from the floods in Ethiopia or something, and then after that happens the frogs all hop out and die and then the flies hatch out, and he went through a whole proving that it wasn't very clever, It was supposed to be religious education, but those plagues very much do happen in a sequence anyway.
The death of the firstborn?
Ah, well, no, not that one, but... yeah.
It's
been hard to... But what about the Old Testament? I mean, surely, you know, he worked on that. I mean, that's
yeah, there's pretty horrendous stuff in there.
It does get us stuck, doesn't it? To try and tease it apart only in the external sense. It doesn't mean...
Yeah.
And you know, where's it going?
Yeah.
It wasn't written for that reason in the first place. People didn't think that way in the old days anyway. We think like that now because we like to muck things out and analyse and put it all in a cube, put it all in a nice long row and say that's the way it went, you know. Historically, that's
and that's the reason that people dismissing religion said, look, it's a bloody horrible book.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, that is unfortunate. But you know, it's horrible if you read it on this level. That's this right. is the meaning of it. That's why I'd rather have Moses as a sort of story, not because it solves a whole lot of problems, well, in my case.
Well, you know, there's, you know, Freud wrote a book actually called Moses and Akhenaten, and he puts them together at the same time, and he suggests that they were one of the same people, that Moses wasn't an Israelite becoming an Egyptian, he was an Egyptian becoming an Israelite. Mm, mm, mm. And when you look back in the history, you know, from Akhenaten back to Amenhotep the Third and Thutmose the Fourth, so that was the line, you know, grandfather, great-grandfather, you know, the practice of monotheism religion, you know, was established in Egypt, you know, for a couple of hundred years.
And Akhenaten was only the restorer of that monotheism, not the actual instigator of it, you know. So, again, we're back to the same story.
Yeah, but he left you know, Thebes, which was the capital at that time, and sort of went to Amarna and sort of built a new city and new temples, you know, and they prayed to the Lord as if you would recognise their prayers as being, you know, from us, you know. That, you know, it was so real and it was so beautiful, you know, when you read the poems or the prayers that they wrote. And, that's why the Moses issue that's coming up has sort of like, you know, put doubt in my mind as to, you know, what is the truth in this? You know, did Moses, was he really man that existed, or is it a story meant to teach?
I don't want to take this too far because I know I'll start rattling off, but an interesting thought is about that Moses and Akhenaten, that no sooner did Akhenaten die, the next generation, which was the part of the new kingdom, actually erased his entire visage and name from the records because he was seen immediately as a heretic.
Yeah.
Now, you look at Moses and killing the Egyptian, you know, right, back to that story, it may be an illustration of that historical type process, which is typical of our thinking and psyche, how we deal with stuff, you know. We want to kill off anything that interferes with our pleasure and you know.
That was interesting that, you know, when they did erase Akhenaten, you know, his cartouche from, you know, their writings or from their hieroglyphs.
And the monuments.
And the monuments, they did everything. But at that time, you know, through the last couple of hundred years in Egypt, what was established was that, you know, there was the worship of the sun god Aten. And, you know, that was what Akhenaten had, you know, left Thebes because theirs was a moon. And that was the literal base religion that the religious leaders owned and possessed and controlled and did what, you know, we saw the you know, the Christian religion do. It changed everything to suit their purposes. Yep. And you know, if it was a weak king, they could use that to dominate the king with. But what was, you know, laying around, you know, from time immemorial is this other side religion that existed, that had a whole different feel to it. So instead of them thinking they were gods, they prayed to God, the one God, you know. So at the time when all the religious people were being excluded then, so the whole place was shut down, you know, and Akhenaten had built this new temple to the one God, and then they worshipped it. So, yeah, of course, when he died, you know, the religious leaders wanted to, you know, destroy that, and that's why he became a heretic, you know, in their eyes. But, you know, what it showed, monotheism religion was around for a long time. If you don't believe, or if you do believe Moses existed, you know, I'm trying to work out whether he existed before then, you know, because when Joseph went into Israel,
and left the religion in there. You know, there must have been the pharaohs looking at that religion and saying, "Wow, you know, these people. You know, if you look at Moses as Joseph as the example, you know, the God that they pray to must be so real because look at what he's done for them." So there must have been an incredible interest from a pharaoh into that religion. But I'm trying to work out how far do you go back to bring Moses into the picture. You know, to say, was Moses before the time, then Akhenaten, and then the destruction of monotheism, and then back to the old religion? Or did Moses, or was Moses Akhenaten?
you'll probably speculate about what it is for many years to come. It's an appearance that it's a barrier. Let's just say that first. It's an appearance. It's not actually a barrier, because when you... because those same barriers exist for all of us if we view it as a barrier, and we all have to come to terms with it. So those questions arise for everybody. The destruction of the firstborn, for me, it's not a problem. It's the destruction of hereditary power in my life. That's what that means to me. And if you can present that to somebody, that the things that you are plagued with from out of your hereditary can be destroyed and dealt with, then that's a positive story.
And leave the history.
Well, the history, people will wrestle over the history, but that's all you're left with. You're left with a lot of facts that you can put together any way you like to suit whatever view you want to present.
Well, then I'll take the view that this is an allegorical story. The way you explained it there is beautiful. What's wrong now? I'm happy to speak to people in that sort of way, and if the issue comes up that it actually happens, well, I don't know. To me, it doesn't make sense that it would physically happen, but I can't comment. But this is the meaning that comes out of this illustration.
And if you're talking to a fundamentalist Christian, you will... It actually is history, but you can understand it this way.
Yes, you can understand it. Yeah. It makes sense. That's right.
Yeah. David, sorry, can I just add that, what I missed before was, when we were talking about... Moses and what it represented. It was, the teaching that, Moses had done something wrong, so he killed and sort of like, he went in and for 40 years, went off. Now, you could say, if you're talking about that literally, you're saying, he murdered somebody, so, he fled to the desert and hid away and, closed off to the world and, married into the Midians and Jethro's daughter and so on. And, he started a whole new life and tried to escape that life. But, that's what's happening in all of us. So that's what the Lord's showing through that story, that there comes a time that, good has to come into the operation of the truths that we know, even the literal truths. And there's a mixing then of the literal and the spiritual, which is, only going to mess us up more. It's going to make us more emotional within ourselves, totally confused. So, when the goods of truth come into that operation, which was the Lord establishing that in Moses, it took time to develop, didn't it, within the human span of life. And, when you look at Swedenborg, that's what the Lord was doing with Swedenborg, taking him through all the processes of learning all of the knowledge that he had and then bringing him into good. And then that was the revelation of what was being offered. It wasn't the natural idea of good where, we take the praise for ourselves. It was the spiritual side of good, which sort of elevates us out of the literal state and into the spiritual state. So that's what I forgot before that I was trying to say. Yeah.
I think the factor is the time frame. We read this and it looks like it all happened one day after the other. It's been condensed, and so if you spread it out over a reasonable length of time, it's more feasible as an actual story.